With me this week to answer your questions are diet and genetics guru Giles Yeo. Hi, Giles.
Good evening, Chris.
What's the world been saying to you lately?
There's always all kinds of pseudoscientific BS that's out there. I mean, one of my favorite ones is this, this company has just launched a DNA diet test. Now, so far, so not new, because I think lots of people have done it. But they have now incorporated one of these Fitbit-y type of thing, watch thing, which goes red or green. And so what happens is you get your DNA test, you have an app, as everything does, and then you go to the supermarché, and then, for example, you then scan the barcode of item X, and then your this watch thing pings red or green whether or not you should eat it.
They're saying then that they can tell, based on your genetic profile, whether that food is fit and suitable for you to eat.
That's correct.
To achieve what? Because your aims might be different from one person to the next, so how would it know?
No, I know exactly. I mean, do you know? Do you have a heart problem? Do you have irritable bowel syndrome? Are you type 2 diabetic? All this information, who knows? And anyway, as you're stood at the beer aisle, for example, is it really ever going to flash green? When is it ever going to flash green? I love beer, but when is it ever going to flash green at the beer aisle?
Well, I don't know. There's some quite good stuff in beer, isn't there? I mean, there if is. You drink Guinness, certainly some older people have been advised to drink Guinness. Hasn't Guinness got certain fortifying things, which if you have a fairly meagre diet other ways can help to pep you up a bit?
I don't know if this is apocryphal or not. It's supposed to be quite high in iron. I don't know if this is true. You know, how much of it is available? I think that probably is true. And it's high in calories for sure.
Mm. Yeah, that's certainly true.
But is it like drinking soup.
Yeah. But is it not true, though, that more about in terms of what foods are and aren't going to agree with you and be good or bad for your health, that's more to do with the microbes that live inside you than just your genetic makeup, isn't it?
I don't know about more to it or not. I think certainly the microbes are going to play a very, very large role. There are going to be genes which indicate whether or not you prefer fatty food or sugary food, whether or not you want to eat more or less. That's true. But none of that is going to be predictive based on some DNA test.
Absolutely. Sitting next to Giles is immunologist and wine expert. We always have you on when we talk about stories about wine, Claire. That's Claire Bryant. But you are a professor of immunology. I mean, that's your day job, isn't
it? That is my day job, Chris. Yes, it is indeed. But you do always wheel me out as the wine expert.
Yeah. So anyway, now's your chance to tell us about something that you've spotted this week.
Which, of course, does have something to do with wine. So, yeah, the thing that perplexes me a lot, in fact, it follows on quite nicely from what Giles has just discussed. So there's this Silicon Valley startup company which says that what it can do is by taking your DNA sample, it can predict what wines you would like to drink, and it will then send you a case of very expensive Californian wines tailored perfectly to your palate. And this company has been sustaining. It's still going after 2 or 3 years. I first saw what it came to my attention. And it's particularly perplexing because, in fact, there are probably only 3 or 4 genes that have been sequenced that have anything really significantly to do with taste, and certainly to do with the taste of wines. And given your taste in wine is very personal and is also affected by food and how you're feeling and your immune system, I have to get the immune system in there somehow, it's remarkable.
Someone did point out to me as well, because they were studying what happens when you put food, including wine, in your mouth. And because of the microbes in your mouth, some wines actually taste different to some people at different stages of the drinking process. So as you put wine in, the evolution of the flavour is because if you have certain populations of mouth microbes, they actually metabolise on the fly some of the things in the wine and change the taste. So as it evolves, you will get that hit of flavour that other people who don't have those bugs don't get.
Absolutely, particularly pronounced actually if you do cheese and wine, and the evolving taste of the cheese and the evolving taste of wine in your mouth. It's amazing. One wine does not taste like another.
So how are this company getting away with flogging this? Because it just seems this DNA business has just gone too far, and it's now being used as this black box, which is everyone's impressed by. It's a bit like AI. You know, 10 years ago, we were putting the letter I in front of everything. If it had I in front of something, it was amazing. Everyone said, oh, that's got to be impressive then. Now it seems to be the AI or something with DNA in front of it.
It is bizarre, but I guess it's so hard to predict what wines you're going to like that maybe if you just don't have the time or are not prepared to put the time in, that you'll believe anything that anyone tells you. And if somebody tells you, yep, your genes tell you that, and we're going to sell you the wine that matches it.
Also with us, Fran Chadha-Day, who is a physicist and works on dark matter and basically how the universe works. So from really complicated things about DNA to really simple things like how the universe works.
Yeah, it's trivial, I assure you.
And what have you spotted that you'd like to share with us?
So one thing that's been in the news recently is reports that scientists have discovered a new fifth force. So the forces we know about are gravity, electromagnetism, the strong force, which holds nuclei together, and the weak force, which is relevant in some nuclear decays. But scientists studying nuclear decays of helium and beryllium, very rare decays, have discovered some anomalies.
This is radioactive decay you're referring to, isn't it? When the atoms fall apart spontaneously.
Yes, that's right. Discovered some anomalies that could point to the existence of a new fifth force. And everyone's gotten very excited about it. I would, as always with these kinds of stories, urge caution. Often these things are a systematic problem with the experiments. These experiments are very complicated, and there's very often an explanation that isn't anything to do with new physics.
Well, one person said if this turns out to be true, that's straight away a Nobel Prize.
That's true, yes. But I don't think we should be rewriting the textbooks just yet.
So a sceptical maybe from Fran. Also with us is James Rudd. Now, we haven't had James on for a little while, but the last time you were on here, you were talking about radioactive toothpaste. You're a cardiologist. You're a heart doctor.
I'm a heart doctor and a heart researcher, yes, Chris. And we have been using a scan on patients who have valvular heart problems and also people who are at risk of heart attacks. And we inject them with a compound that's very similar to toothpaste. It's called sodium fluoride. And the sodium fluoride sends to home in on the patient's arteries and heart valves. We use that information to try to predict people who are going to have heart attacks and strokes, and also people who are going to have valve disease in the future.
We should point out though, James, that you're one of the inventors and the pioneers of this technology.
And many, many other people who've worked on this around the world. Yeah, indeed.
It's a massive problem. We know that people with narrowed heart arteries have symptoms when they get angina, pain in the chest when they exercise and things. But what we don't know is the people who are going to have a heart attack, because all of a sudden one of those narrowings is going to cause blood to clot in the artery. And your work is actually giving us a clue as to where those hot spots might be that we currently had no way of spotting before.
I mean, in a sense, they're a bit like dark matter, because the ones that tend to go pop and cause the sudden death and heart attacks are often the ones that are very, very, very small areas of the artery, not really causing a big narrowing. So actually very hard for us to spot using our traditional scans.
Well, there's the panel of people we have with us this week.